to get back to a very periodic series that we do about the priesthood that I've entitled The Priesthood of God, Good and Bad. When Mike taught his class on the Holy Spirit, his first lesson he asked for you to raise your hands of how many people had studied the Holy Spirit. And I think there was maybe two or three hands at most. And I would imagine if I was to ask that same question regarding the priesthood, there probably would be even fewer hands. It's a subject that we don't study a whole lot. And perhaps the reason is it's kind of a difficult study because the high priests are not like something the biblical writers say, let me just tell you all about them. And that's what makes it so difficult, because sometimes they're part of the story and then they just disappear for a while. And trying to trace a chronological history of them is not always easy, as you'll see tonight. In fact, as I was preparing for this lesson, I started doing research on Zadok and who he was and who his son was. And is there enough information about Zadok to include a lesson about him? And then in the middle of all of this, I found Zadok's son was Ahimaas, and then another said it was Shallum, and I said, what's going on here? And I was very confused, and I didn't know what's going on, and so I had to do some more research, and ultimately I found out there are two priests by the name of Zadok. One that appears a little bit later and one that appears a little bit earlier. And I had been doing research on the later one, thinking that he fit in the earlier one. And so I had to scrap everything and start all over. But I think I got it right now. And so we're going to talk about Zadok and Jehoiada. And there's priests that come in between them, but there's just nothing known about them. There's no story about them. So I want you to know they exist, but there's just nothing to teach about them. So we're going to talk a little bit about Zadok, but most of our time is going to be on Jehoiada. And remember that as we're talking about the priesthood, one of the things that is interesting is that the priesthood works like royalty. That there's a high priest, and when he dies, his son is to take the high priesthood, and then when he dies, his son takes it. And so we know that Nadab and Abihu died, and so when Aaron passed away from this life, the high priesthood went to Eleazar and then to his son Phinehas. But for some reason, it popped over here to Ithamar, the fourth son of Aaron, through Eli. And we don't know why that is. And we know the story of Eli, one of the more popular high priests, not probably for a good reason, that God said to Eli, I'm going to take the priesthood away from you because of the sin with your sons. But God didn't do that right away. And so all the high priests that we've been talking about all descend from Eli through Ithamar. But now, our last high priest that we were talking about was Abiathar. And he was a high priest during the days of King David. And so Eli was in the period of the judges. Abiathar is in the period of David. You kind of give an idea of how much time has passed. Well, we're going to now talk about Zadok, but notice where Zadok appears. Zadok is over here, a descendant of Eleazar. And so, by the end of tonight's lesson, God will have finally shifted the high priesthood from Ithamar and Eli back over to Zadok and Eleazar. And the way that happens is, remember, we were talking the last time about Abiathar, that in 2 Samuel 8, verse 17, all of a sudden, for some unknown reason, again, the biblical writers don't highlight it, Zadok is anointed as high priest right along with Abiathar. And so a period of time of David, we have two high priests. Abiathar, who was there first, and now Zadok is added. And we don't know why. Perhaps it's God providentially getting ready to shift it over to Zadok and back to Eliezer's lineage. So we have this co-priesthood, much like in the New Testament, where we have two priests in the days of Jesus. Remember that? Where we have Annas, and then we have Caiaphas, right? But these two are of two different Levitical lines, Zadok and Abiathar. So Abiathar and Zadok are faithful to David throughout his years, or at least most of his years. In fact, both of them are faithful when Absalom tries his coup attempt and tries to take over the kingdom, and does take over the kingdom for a period of time. In fact, they stay behind and they kind of become spies for David, and they're faithful to him all that time. And then even after that time, but then you might recall that there's one other son of David that tries to take over the kingdom after the time of Absalom. Do you remember his name? His name was Adonijah. And Adonijah tried, when David was on his deathbed, to try to anoint himself as king and try to get all of Israel behind him. And when David learned of it, David got his staff together, his faithful staff, and he said, "Take Solomon quickly, gather as much of Israel as you can, and you anoint Solomon as king, and you declare him to be king." And the voice for Solomon, the cheer for Solomon, was louder than that for Adonijah, and so that worked. Well, what we learn in 1 Kings chapter 1, 5 through 8, is that Abiathar stabs David in the back, and he sides with Adonijah. And so the longtime high priest for David goes over to Adonijah. And I don't know what his thinking was. If it was, well, David's going to be dead, and maybe Solomon and I don't get along too well, and that he'll just take Zadok, and this is my only shot of continuing as high priest through Adonijah. I don't know what this thinking was, but it was a terrible mistake. And so Solomon takes the throne, and in 1 Kings chapter 2, 26 through 27, instead of killing Abiathar like all the other conspirators, including Adonijah, Solomon removes him from the priesthood and exiles him to his hometown of Anathoth. And he says, "Because you were faithful to my father David, and because you carried the Ark of the Covenant all the days of David," and remember, David's life was just up and down and up and down, he says, "I'm going to let you live. But here's the stipulation. You've got to stay in Anathoth. As long as you stay there, your life is safe. But once you leave there, in other words, you're open prey. And someone can take your life as an avenging." And so that's how Abiathar is removed from the high priesthood, and how it's moved from Eli's family over to Zadok. And so as we talk about Zadok the Good, in 1 Kings chapter 1, 39, Zadok is not only faithful to David in the transition from David to Solomon, Zadok is actually the high priest that takes the horn of oil and anoints Solomon as king. And that usually was done by a high priest. And so he is the actual one that anoints Solomon as king. And that was a very important event in overthrowing Adonijah's coup attempt. Look, if you would, it's 1 Kings chapter 2, verse 35, where Solomon kind of awards him and declares him to be priest. 1 Kings chapter 2, verse 35, "The king appointed Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, over the army in his place, and the king appointed Zadok, the priest, in the place of Abiathar." And so now we're told that Zadok replaces Abiathar. And so we once again have a lone high priest. I will tell you this, over in chapter 4, verse 4, which seems to be recorded after chapter 2, verse 35, once again, both of them are mentioned as priest, high priest. Not sure why that is, but the story clearly shows that Abiathar was removed by that time. So I just want to make mention of that discrepancy there. But then we don't really read about Zadok. He just kind of disappears. But everything we hear about Zadok is good. And we talked about with Abiathar, there's a good lesson in that. Because Abiathar was so faithful to God and so faithful to David for so long, and then at the end, he betrayed David and God. And so it's not enough, brother and sister in Christ, to be like Abiathar. You've got to not only serve God all your life, faith, you've got to finish strong. And that's what Zadok does. And I don't know if Zadok was there when Solomon starts to turn away from God, or if he's gone by that time. In the days of Solomon, there isn't a whole lot that is talked about as far as the high priest or the priesthood for that matter. And so Zadok just kind of disappears from the story. And as best we can get from genealogies, biblical, historical, Zadok is replaced by, I believe it's his son, Ahimaas. It was actually mentioned that even before becoming a high priest, he was also an aide to David, became a spy to David during some of those Absalom days and Adonijah days. And then Azariah becomes high priest, but nothing is really talked about as far as him. And then you have a high priest by the name of Jehohanan. And again, there's no story of Jehohanan. And then we have apparently a high priest by the name of Jehoiarib, and then Jehoshaphat, but we put a little asterisk there because they are not listed as high priest anywhere in the genealogies of the Bible. They're just left out of the high priest genealogies. And historically, we have some documents that they were high priests, but not biblically. And so we put a little asterisk there. And so from Zadok to the priest we want to talk about now, there's quite a few high priests between them, but there's no story there. And perhaps the reason is that we go from the time of David and Solomon all the way down to the divided kingdom. And so in the days of Solomon, there's not a whole lot of good that's happening religiously as Solomon turns away from God. Perhaps that has something to do with the fact that the high priests are not mentioned that much. And then the divided kingdom, we see quite the same thing. Until you get to the story that involves Jehoiada. And we have a little more about this high priest in the days of the divided kingdom. So we're going to talk a little bit about Jehoiada for the rest of our time. Now, in each of these priests that we've talked about, there's always been at least one lesson that we've learned from these priests that we can take and we can learn from and we can apply as God's priest in the church. That's what we are. We are God's priest. And sometimes we need to think about it that way. Think about our service and our obedience to God, our relationship to Him as God's priest. Jesus, of course, is the high priest. I think it was back in the 1980s, George Michael sang a song called Father Figure. And I remember at that time, even at that time, I was like, no, no, thank you. I don't need you as my father figure. But Jehoiada is a lesson about being a father figure. And that's the story and that's the lesson we're going to take from Jehoiada. Now, we all know that priests today are called father. I don't know when that started. I just haven't come across when priests started becoming called father. We're well aware Jesus told the Pharisees that you call no man your father, your spiritual father. And I don't know if they were calling their priest father, and he was referencing that. He said it not to the priests, he said it to the Pharisees. And I don't know, there's nothing that says Jehoiada was ever called father. But the story we're going to look at is he becomes a father to one he was not a father actually of. And his father figure becomes an important aspect in the history of Judah and its kings. Now, to bring out this lesson, I've got to tell you a little bit of the story. We've got to set the stage a little bit, if you will. And so you might remember that the days of evil King Ahab and his evil wife Jezebel, and that it took a long time for God to finally set in motion the wheels to get rid of the king of Ahab and Jezebel. Well, they're still around. There's still some of the family of King Ahab. In fact, you might remember one of the kings of Judah marries one of the daughters of Ahab. And so Judah becomes influenced by Ahab, who's over here in Israel. One of the sons of that marriage over to Judah is King Ahaziah. And he doesn't last very long. In fact, he has a sister, a princess to the throne, who marries a high priest by the name of Jehoiada. And so this high priest that we're talking about actually is married to the sister of Ahaziah. I think she is the only princess that's ever spoken of as being married to a high priest. And when Ahaziah dies and the throne is open, well, what happens? Well, number one, we see that the house of Ahab had been eradicated for the most part, not completely, by King Jehu, who was no moral figure himself. God basically called King Jehu because he was a man that just, you know, killed everybody, and he kills one by one the descendants of Ahab. Most of the house of Ahab has been eradicated, but not all of them. And so when King Ahaziah dies and the throne of Judah is open, Ahaziah's mother, the queen, arises and appoints herself as the queen, the ruler of Judah. Now, if you know anything about royalty, you know she's not supposed to do that. The only way she can do that is if Ahaziah has no heirs, has no sons, has no heirs to the throne. Well, Ahaziah has quite a few sons. Athaliah's grandsons. Are you still with me? So what does Athaliah do in order to remain on the throne, to remain the queen? Well, she has her grandsons, and she what? She starts killing all of them. Isn't that a great grandmother? She starts killing all of her grandsons one by one by one, so there's no heir to the throne. She kills all the grandsons except for one. Now remember, the wife of Jehoiada is the sister of Ahaziah. Athaliah is the mother of Ahaziah. But it is believed that she, even though they have the same father, King Joram, that she was a different mother. She's not from Athaliah. And it was common for kings, as you know, to have more than one wife. And it's believed that the wife of Jehoiada, even though she was royalty, she was a princess, she was nothing like Ahab or Jezebel or Athaliah. I introduce her because she becomes key to the story. So as Athaliah is killing all of her grandsons, she's able to kill all of them except for one. Except for one. How many stories in the Bible do we read of one escape? A remnant of one. So as we talk about Jehoiada the Good, look over at 2 Kings chapter 11. 2 Kings chapter 11. Notice how far we started in 1 Kings chapter 2, and now we've got to go over to all the way 2 Kings chapter 11 to get our next story of the high priest. So 2 Kings chapter 11, beginning verse 1. When Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah, saw that her son was dead, She rose and destroyed all the royal offspring. But Jehosheba, that's the daughter we're talking, that's the wife of Jehoiada we're talking about. But Jehosheba, the daughter of King Joram, sister of Ahaziah, took Joash. That's the one. Took Joash, the son of Ahaziah, and stole him from among the king's sons who were being put to death, and placed him and his nurse in the bedroom. And so they hid him from Athaliah, and he was not put to death. And so the wife of Jehoiada takes Joash, probably the youngest, and she hides him in the bedroom with his nurse. And then when it was safe, relatively safe, verse 3, so he was hidden with her, his nurse, in the house of the Lord 6 years, while Athaliah was reigning over the land. And so you have this baby Joash that is taken to the temple. And for the next 6 years, Jehoiada and his wife raise him and protect him. And I think it's interesting that the temple becomes this refuge for Joash, for the only surviving heir to the throne. Athaliah is so evil, what's the one place she doesn't want to go or be around? The temple. And so for 6 years, he is kept there. Athaliah's reign of terror lasted 7 years. Not a full 7 years, but she started her seventh year. And the reason it only lasted 7 years is because of what we read in 2 Kings chapter 4 through 16, which we're just going to talk about. When Joash turned 7, Jehoiada the high priest makes a covenant with the Kerites. You say, well, who are these Kerites? And that's what I had to ask. Apparently, they are bodyguards that are paid. They're mercenaries. And so he pays these bodyguards to protect the temple. But in essence, they're protecting young Joash. And he makes up this plan on the 7th birthday, 7 year birthday of Joash, that they're going to protect the temple, and they're going to surround it, and they're going to bring Joash out, and Jehoiada is going to take the 7-year-old and he's going to anoint him as king over Judah, just like Zadok anointed Solomon. There's some parallels there, as there is a threat to the throne by Adonijah. Here the threat to the throne is Athaliah. And so when they do this, they all cry out, they all yell, Joash is king. Hail, Joash is king. And Athaliah hears that. And she goes to the palace window and she looks down at the temple where this is all taking place. And she yells out to the high priest, treason! Treason! You're a traitor! And Jehoiada has the Kerites go and bring her out of the palace, away from the temple, and she's put to death. And so this 7 years of terror could have been a lot longer, but Jehoiada, because of his plan, really saves Judah from Athaliah and saves the Davidic throne. If he didn't take this stand, there's no telling how the history of the kings of Judah would ever have turned out. But here's this high priest who saves Judah and the Davidic throne because of his steps. So, Jehoiada the good. What's the rest of the story? Well, Joash, you know, is one of those good kings who does the will of the Lord. He is righteous. And even at age 7, He starts reforming Judah. He starts getting rid of the idols and brings the people back to temple worship. He starts making repairs and collecting money to repair the temple so that it can be used once again to worship Jehovah. Even at 7 years of age, the reforms start. And those reforms are recorded from 2 Kings 11 all the way to 2 Kings chapter 12, verse 16. Now I want to ask you, how does a 7-year-old start telling a nation, we're going to change our ways? How does a 7-year-old say, this is right and this is wrong, we've done wrong, we're going to do right? Can you picture a 7-year-old having that much knowledge and maturity to do that? I don't think Joash was doing this on his own. No doubt these reforms that were started when Joash was 7 years of age were brought about because of the guidance, because of the teaching, because of the father figure of Jehoiada. There's no doubt about that. Jehoiada knew that he not only had to protect the heir to the throne as a baby to where he would be old enough to take the throne, but he understood that he had to be a father figure to him. He understood that he had to teach him about right versus wrong. He had to teach him about Yahweh and honoring God, about how to worship God and why idols and paganism was bad and evil. And so at 7 years of age, he may not have understood all of it, but under the influence of that father figure of Jehoiada, who must have been his nephew, Joash starts to reform Judah. And all the influence of Athaliah just slowly disappears. Isn't that a great lesson? I mean, we as God's priest need to be like Jehoiada. We need not to ignore our young generation, our young people. As priests, we want to be an influence on them. Some of our young people might need a father figure. At most, they need a righteous influence. Number one, as God's priest, we want to teach our own children. And I want to warn us about letting time slip away. I want to warn us about letting our kids get so caught up in this activity and that activity, and they're so busy with school and homework of secular subjects, that we lose and forget the time to teach them and talk to them about God, to be a father figure to them and a mother figure to our kids. And the fact that he was able to become king at age 7 and do all of this teaches us something that Solomon wrote in the book of Proverbs, that basically, as I paraphrase, start while there's still hope. Start when they're young. For 6 years, he taught him. And by 7, he was at least knowledgeable enough and mature enough to listen to the influence and start all of this. Our young people can do incredible things for God, at least by understanding at early, early ages. He was a father, not because he was a priest, because he was a father figure to Joash, who didn't have one at a time where it was critical. So as long as Jehoiada was alive, Joash was righteous. The kingdom of Judah was faithful to God. And that was the good of Jehoiada. And maybe there's nothing bad to say about Jehoiada, but maybe there's one thing, one possible bad thing as we close our lesson tonight that we could say about Jehoiada. The real bad is from Joash. It's not really Jehoiada. There's a possibility that Jehoiada had one little mistake that he made. What might that have been? Well, let's go to 2 Chronicles 24. 2 Chronicles chapter 24, as we bring it to a close tonight. And look at verse 15. Now when Jehoiada reached a ripe old age, he died. He was 130 years old at his death. And they buried him in the city of David among the kings, because he had done well in Israel and to God and his house. But, there's the contrast. But after the death of Jehoiada, the officials of Judah came, and they bowed down to the king, and the king listened to them. And they abandoned the house of the Lord, the God of their fathers. And they served the Asherim and the idols. And so wrath came upon Judah and Jerusalem for their guilt. There's no doubt Jehoiada taught and influenced Joash to do what was right. But perhaps, not saying this dogmatic, but perhaps he never taught Joash to stand on his own. Perhaps he said, this is what you should do and this is what's right, but never told him why it was right. Or never gave him the ability to make his own choices of right versus wrong. And sometimes there are kids that are like that. As long as they're around the right influence, the right friends, the right environment, they make the right choices because what? They're just following the right things that people are doing. But you take that same person and you put them in the wrong environment with the wrong friends, and they start making the wrong choices because they're not really standing on their own. They're just following who they're hanging around. They're not an individual. They're not a leader. They're not making their own. They're just following whatever is popular around them. And I've seen that happen. I've seen kids in church and around camp groups and around good young people. They do all the right things. They look so solid. But then when they're away from that and they're out in the world and they're with the people of the world, they're making all the wrong choices. And I don't know if Jehoiada was guilty of that. But it is interesting that as soon as Jehoiada dies, that Joash becomes this whole different person, making all the wrong choices, even the very choices that violate the very things he reformed in the days that Jehoiada was alive. And so Joash turned from God and served idols. And look at verse 19. So God sends prophets, and yet he sent prophets to them to bring them back to the Lord. And though they testified against them, they would not listen. The officials that are really in charge won't listen. And so Joash won't listen. And then look at verse 20. God sends one more prophet. Then the Spirit of God came to Zechariah, on Zechariah, the son. Look at whose son he is. The son of Jehoiada the priest. And he stood above the people and he said to them, then God has said, why do you transgress the commandments of the Lord and do not prosper? Why aren't things going well for you? And he says, it's because you have forsaken the Lord and he has forsaken you. God sends one more prophet, the son of Jehoiada, Zechariah. Now, I don't know how much connection Zechariah had to Joash. They basically had the same father. And look at what Joash does when perhaps a man that was like a brother to him, raised by the same father, comes and says, you're not doing right. In verse 21, so they conspired against him at the command of the king, that's Joash, They stoned him to death in the court of the house of the Lord. And thus Joash the king did not remember the kindness which his father Jehoiada had shown him. But he murdered his son. And as he died, he said, "May the Lord see and avenge." You talk about a turnaround. That's what Joash did. He went from righteous reformer to a murderer and a pagan. Killing Zechariah, the son of the man that saved the kingdom and saved his life. So God sent Zechariah and he killed him. And look at where he killed him. He killed them at the temple. He killed them at the very place where for 6 years was his home, his haven of safety. The very place where he was anointed as king. The very place where, no doubt, Jehoiada and Joash had time and time again talks about God. In Matthew 23, Jesus brings up this story of the killing of Zechariah. You remember Matthew 23, right? This is where Jesus lets the Pharisees have it. The Pharisees and the scribes, what does he call? He calls them hypocrites. And he just starts talking about all of their faults, all of their unrighteousness, all of their sins. And in the midst of all that, he says, "Therefore, behold, I am sending you prophets and wise men and scribes, and this is what you Pharisees will do. Some of them you will kill and you will crucify, and some of them you will scourge in your synagogues and persecute from city to city." And as you go in the New Testament, you see that's exactly what they did. And he says, this is all going to happen, what? "That upon you may fall the guilt of all the righteous blood shed on the earth." He's not saying you become guilty of what these people have done, like Joash, but you become guilty of that blood because you're doing the exact same stuff that they're doing. And so, the guilt of all the righteous blood shed on earth, from the blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, whom you murdered between the temple and the altar. Now, I want you to forget that son of Berechiah. That is a disputed passage that seems to be an error of copying error. We don't have the time to talk about that. But most scholars believe this is not Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, who became the prophet of that book, that minor prophet called Zechariah, who lived much later than this. Scholars believe Jesus is bringing up the Zechariah we just read about. The one that was killed, in which Jesus says, between the temple and the altar. Jesus gives what many call an A to Z list of the prophets that were killed. The first one, he says, was Abel. And the last one you killed was Zechariah. That's the good and the bad of Jehoiada. And the lesson for us is that as God's priests, we want to be an influence for good. We want to be a father figure to those who don't have a father figure. We want to encourage and help and teach our young people to stand for the Lord, not just to be good when they're around us, but to teach them in such a way that they will know right from wrong and they will have that ability to choose right, even when we're not around. And there might be one here tonight that hasn't chosen what is right. If we can help you come back to the ultimate father figure, your own Father God, won't you let that be known tonight as together we stand and as we sing.